From the City of Angels, near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, it's called The Extra Dimensionals. John D'Souza joins us. And by the way, I'm back in Los Angeles. I've been gone since right before Thanksgiving, and I came back to a mountain of Christmas cards, letters, you name it, and I just want to thank you all. Truly humbling. Thank you. Here's what's happening. The FBI has arrested the wife of the gunman in the Pulse nightclub in Orlando massacre on charges connected to the shooting rampage. The June 2016 shooting, seen as the deadliest in modern U.S. history, killed 49 people, wounded dozens more. Police shot and killed the gunman, Omar Mateen, after a three-hour standoff during which he pledged allegiance to the Islamic State. The charges against his wife, she's 30 years old, including aiding and abetting his attempts to support ISIS, as well as obstruction of justice. Tragedy in Miami. At least 8 people shot during the Martin Luther King Jr. Day celebrations in Miami. The shooting occurred at Memorial Park in Northwest Miami-Dade around 4 p.m., a couple hours after a Martin Luther King Jr. parade had ended. Police department took to Twitter condemning the shooting by calling it shameful and not what the followers of Dr. King Jr. want out of the community. 2 suspects arrested there. Dr. Martin Luther King, of course, the American Baptist minister and activist who was the leader in the civil rights movement, is best known for his role in the advancement of civil rights, of course. He was assassinated almost 49 years ago.
I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will they be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream.
Gosh, I remember those days. I just remember, John F. Kennedy being killed in 63, then Dr. King in 68, RFK in 68. What times they were. Jeez. President-elect Donald Trump prayed with the son of Martin Luther King Jr. at the Trump Towers. Mr. Trump prayed and talked about the legacy of his father. And in several days, Donald Trump will be sworn in as the nation's 45th president of the United States. Howard Bloom, who's been following all the campaigns for us since they have begun, and of course he was a Hillary Clinton supporter, is with us. They are roughing him up, Howard. Why don't they give him a chance to get in office first?
Well, this is going to be the most conflict-ridden inauguration in American history. On the surface, it's going to be normal. There's going to be a concert on the National Mall, fireworks, a ball, a parade, luncheons, dinners, and a swearing-in ceremony. But under the surface, this is going to reflect one of the deepest conflicts this nation has ever experienced. It's the conflict that Donald Trump and the presidential election that you and I covered stirred in the very heart of the nation. Look, Hillary Clinton, nobody's supposed to say this, but Hillary Clinton won the popular vote by 2.9 million votes. But Donald Trump legitimately won the Electoral College. And that's a source of conflict. So Barack Obama had 1.8 million people at his inauguration. Donald Trump will have half of that, a mere 900,000. Washington hotels are only half booked. They expect to be fully booked for an event like this. The number of buses with permits to park in Washington for a protest event, not the main event, the Women's March on Washington on Saturday, is 5 times the number of buses with parking permits for the inauguration itself on Friday, 5 times. Why? Partly because this is an occasion for the rich. It's an occasion for pay and play. $500,000 buys you an intimate dinner with Mike Pence and his wife and 2 opportunities to rub shoulders with Donald and Melania Trump. The 2 occasions are an elegant dinner and a black tie ball. All of this is set up by the Republican Party committee. This is the very swamp that Donald Trump told us he wanted to drain. Now, all the living presidents, this is one mark, at least, of the country trying to come together, will be at the inauguration with the exception of George Bush the Elder, who is 92 and has health problems, which means Jimmy Carter, George W. Bush, and most important from the point of view of symbolism, Bill and Hillary Clinton will be there. But the big entertainment stars that Trump used to brag that he can attract better than any human on earth will not be showing up. Most important, 38 Democratic senators and congresspeople will boycott the inauguration. They agree with Georgia Congressman John Lewis that Donald Trump is not a legitimate president. Now, that sounds like an extreme.
And by that, he is the legitimate president.
He got elected president. But here's one of the major reasons behind these 38 people pulling out. It's a 35-page Trump dossier from a former high-level British MI5 spy named Christopher Steele. The dossier was paid for by a Republican, a fat cat who did not want Trump to win the Republican presidential nomination. And it details between 5 and 8 years of Russia's alleged efforts, because all of this is alleged, to turn Trump into a Russian asset, and Russia's alleged success in getting Trump to report on the comings and goings of Russian oligarchs in the USA. Now, Trump calls this fake news, but the BBC has found independent sources to allegedly corroborate it. Some of them actually have, they say, audio tapes and videotapes. And the head of MI5, which you know is the legendary James Bond spy agency, the most august spy agency in the world, his name is Sir Alex Younger, used this dossier in a crucial speech. And the Trump dossier is getting serious attention from numerous other Western spy agencies because it seemingly blows wide open Russia's attempts to undermine Western elections and to torpedo the Western system. So things can look normal. There will be a parade. There will be balls. But under the surface, something deep and possibly very dangerous is happening.
It is something I have never witnessed, Howard, in my life and in my broadcast career.
Me neither. And I, despite being a Democrat, my tendency is to hope for the best and to hope that there is some genius in Donald Trump's gut and his instincts that will allow him to make moves that in fact will improve things, even though he is factually incorrect 25% to 50% of the time.
All right, Howard. Thank you so much. Howard Bloom, listen to this story. A family of highly drug-resistant and potentially deadly bacteria may be spreading more wildly and widely as they thought. According to a new study, the researchers examined this bacteria causing disease in 4 U.S. hospitals, and they found a variety of what they call the CRE strain. It's a huge word. They also found a wide variety of genetic traits. They are resistant to antibiotics, and they're scared about it. They really are. And they say they could be attributed to 9,300 infections and 600 deaths in the United States. Astronaut Eugene Cernan, the last man to be on the moon, has died at the age of 82. Cernan was the spacecraft commander of Apollo 17, his third space flight and the last scheduled U.S. manned mission to the moon. That was back in December of 1972. According to a family statement, Cernan, a retired naval officer, died following ongoing health issues. Let's check in with Dr. Sky Stephen Cates. Dr. Sky, another superhero gone.
Absolutely, George. Of the original 12 moonwalkers, as probably many of the audience you know already, only 6 are still alive, and as you reported accurately, of course, the sad passage of Eugene Cernan. Myself, and I'm sure many listeners, as he used to attend many of the air shows, and met him on numerous occasions at the Reno Air Races and other places. But George, a little more legacy on this man. He spent some 566 hours in space, and actually he and Harrison Schmitt, the only geologist to go to the moon on Apollo 17, they spent some 73 hours on the lunar surface, traveling some 19 miles in their duration with the lunar rover, and they collected some 220 pounds of those precious moon rocks. They even collected some orange samples, which even to this day are much different than the moon rocks on the surface. But something I thought very appropriate to talk now to our audience about, a quote about going back to the moon, and I quote Eugene Cernan, "Too many years have passed for me to still be the last man to have left his footprints on the moon. I believe that with all my heart that somewhere out there there's a young boy or a girl with indomitable will and courage who will lift that dubious distinction from my shoulders and take us back to where we belong. Let us give that dream a chance," end of quote. And indeed, that's something that so many people, George, are hoping. And indeed, 45 years ago is too long, as we remember Eugene Cernan. But in the live sky, George, for everyone out there listening, very cool things as we pass the mid-mark of January 2017. On Friday, you can see in the early morning sky, just before dawn, a beautiful conjunction of the giant planet Jupiter and the last quarter moon. And if you're an evening sky watcher, if you're not able to be up very early in the morning, still look high into the southwest. The planet Venus, absolutely spectacular, some 60 million miles from your eye. The planet Mars, just to the upper left, 162 million miles away from Earth. Amazing. They'll conjunct as they move toward them, together, I should say, toward the end of this month and early February. And the Japanese spacecraft, Akatsuki, which is otherwise known as Dawn in Japanese, has detected some strange winds on the planet Venus. As you look at Venus, know that the clouds move around the planet once every 4 days with winds over 250 miles an hour. And George, the surface temperature, over 900 degrees. Not our kind of place, but in the cold of winter, maybe it's an alternative, you think?
I think. Thank you, Stephen. Dr. Scott, Stephen Gates. At coasttocoastam.com, if you look under tonight's program, you'll see a picture of a formation on Mars. Just amazing. I'll explain it. A wedge and dome. It's a keyhole-shaped formation observed on Mars. It's now the subject of a new science paper published in the current issue of the Journal of Space Exploration. The paper, called A Wedge and Dome Formation Set with the Flat Plains of Libia Montes, reveals the results of a three-year analysis of NASA images that identify a conjoined triangular and circular structure on the surface of Mars. Contributors to the paper include two members of the Society for Planetary SETI Research, William Sanders and George Haas. They're with me next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie back with you. Let me introduce to you a couple of our guests. George Haas, he's been on before, is a member of the Society for Planetary SETI Research, founder and premier investigator of the Cydonia Institute, and, of course, is a member of both the Pre-Columbian Society of the University of Pennsylvania in D.C. Mr. Haas is also the author, artist, writer, curator. He became interested in the face on Mars after reading a book in 1991. He is a co-author with William Sanders in the Martian Codex, the Cydonia Codex, and their DVD, the Mars Codex, as well. George Haas back on Coast to Coast. George, always a pleasure bringing you on.
It's a pleasure to be on your show. I'm excited about being on tonight.
Oh, my gosh, this structure's unbelievable. We'll get into that. Now, let me bring Bill in. Bill Sanders, of course, is the graduate of the University of Alberta in Edmonton in 1977 with a Bachelor of Science degree in geomorphology. Now, he began work in the petroleum industry in Alberta, and then in 1978, and currently works as an independent petroleum geoscience consultant in Calgary. Mr. Sanders began looking at the Mars Global Surveyor images back in 1998, and here he is back on Coast to Coast. Hi, William.
Hi, George. Nice to be back.
Good to have you, too. How are things?
Things pretty good, although I'm retired now. I'm not living in Calgary anymore.
Oh, you did retire. I never thought you'd retire.
Yeah, well, there comes a time, I guess. But, yeah, it allows me to spend a little bit more time on Mars research.
Well, the research is incredible. Let me start with you first, George. Of course, we've got this picture of this keyhole structure that's on Mars. Tell us a little bit more about it. You and William wrote, of course, a position paper. You contributed to the paper that was in the Space Science Journal. But what is this thing, George?
We believe we now have overwhelming evidence for artificial structures on the surface of Mars. Not only this keyhole structure, but some other formations that we'll talk about later. The amount of information that we have now is just stunning. This formation was brought to our attention by a member of the Society for Planetary SETI Research, Greg Orme. He's the one that discovered the crown face.
Mm-hmm.
So NASA discovered this. They've been taking pictures of this for a while. But they had put up a brand new Mars reconnaissance high-rise image back in 2011 that Greg had found, you know, going through the files. You know, NASA takes these images, and, you know, the public really doesn't know what's going on unless you actually have to be active and go in there and look for things. And he stumbled upon this, and he saw that this was a really interesting formation. And NASA also thought this was very exciting. In some of the images that NASA releases through the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, they'll put little captions up to try to explain what you're looking at when you see these images. And so they had a caption, and they actually called this an exclamation mark. So So right from the beginning, they saw the structural.
So they didn't hide the picture.
Oh no! This they've been taking pictures of this since 2007, and this picture you can tell that they were focusing right in on it because it's very tightly framed, very high resolution. I mean, it's a beautiful image. I mean, you see the picture we have there that you're putting up on your website. It's an amazing image, and it's very revealing.
Well, what's even stranger when you compare that to the same kind of looking structure in Japan? I mean, they're almost identical, George.
Well, yeah, that is amazing. These keyhole structures, which we mentioned in the paper, they're basically universal. You find these American Indians built these keyhole structures. However, archaeologists in the early mound exploration that they did here in the United States, they called them war clubs because they thought they looked more like a war club than a I guess a keyhole formation, but they're very similar. So the American Indians built these. You find these over in Saudi Arabia. These tombs are all over. There's hundreds of them all over the place. They're all over Japan. Until we found this, or were exposed to it, I didn't even know about these keyhole formations in Japan. And I went on the internet and found a bunch of these, and my God, looking at the aerial views, they look just like what we're looking at on Mars.
Yeah, absolutely. And Bill, what's your take on this thing?
Well, it is very surprising to see two formations that are opposed in their structure. The dome shape actually looks like it has a split down the middle, and it's almost circular, whereas the upper portion is triangular and has linear extensions from top to bottom. It's very unusual, and other researchers, NASA researchers, have also said that it's very, very hard to explain how something like this could occur.
From above, it looks like also between the top and the bottom part of this keyhole, it looks like there might be an underground tunnel or something. Am I seeing that correctly? What do you think?
It's a bit of a shadow there.
Yeah.
It's hard to say whether it's shadow or there is something there. From other images we've seen, I haven't noticed anything that looks like an entrance. But it's another unusual thing is if you see the picture, the expansive view, down at I guess it's the last image on the website there, you can see what looks like a river or a channel that runs directly through where the formation is, and it's totally isolated. So if there was water running through there, you would think that this would cause some sort of a dam, and there would be signs of water pooling, which there is not. It seems to just run right in between the two, the circular formation and the angular formation, and just continue on. It's very difficult to explain how something could erode if this is actually an erosional feature, the circular portion, and those same forces not act in the same way upon the linear structure.
And when you look at this, as I've been looking at it all day, Bill, I've been trying to say, how could this be made naturally? What kind of formation, what could happen to create this naturally? I can't come up with an explanation.
Well, no, I mean, this is the formation is about a mile and a half long, too. So you're talking about a very good-sized piece of rock. So to think of this being transported to this location from somewhere else is pretty hard to imagine.
How deep does it go, do you think? I mean, so it's a mile long. It looks like it could be a half a mile deep almost.
Yeah, I'm not actually sure. George, do you know?
I don't have the measurements offhand, but all the measurements were done in the paper. And we also did an analysis of the geometry. I think there's a picture of that up on the Coast to Coast. Oh, you have a collection of the pictures that are from the paper.
Yep.
And so we did a whole geological, the analysis of the structural formation and all the alignments. And, you know, it's just amazing, like Bill had said, for this image to have such radically opposing shapes, you know, this wedge shape and then this round circular form. The circular form, if it is a dome, parts of it almost looks like it could be structurally collapsed in certain areas.
Well, that's true. George, hold on. Bill, we'll be back with both of you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. George Haas with us, William Saunders. They, by the way, wrote the book, The Martian Codex, More Reflections from Mars, among other works they've done together. George, this structure, whereabouts on Mars is it located?
It's located in the Libya Mounds area on Mars.
Now, where would that be in proximity to, like, the face on Mars?
In the area, if you're looking at the face, it would be in the eastern hemisphere, away from that.
How far?
Oh, God, I don't know.
A long time. Bill, do you know how far it would be?
Well, we're almost at the equator here, so no, I don't know in terms of distance, but it's I believe it's on the other side.
But it's kind of desolate out there, isn't it? Of course, everything's desolate on Mars.
It's a very large remnants of a large impact crater. And it's the rocks themselves are close to the rim in a relative sense, but they are very isolated.
In your opinion, Bill, what do you think this structure is? And if it's created by some force or entity, what might it be used for?
Oh, well, that's a good question, because we found a lot of structures on Mars that they have an aesthetic aspect to them that we don't know if that's the single purpose or if there's another purpose in the sense of underground living or tombs or something along those lines. But if people are looking at the computers, they can scroll down to the third image we have labeled C and see the mathematics that are involved in this structure. The mound has almost a circular base,
yeah.
And an isosceles triangle can be drawn in the wedge shape, and the whole feature itself is basically bilaterally. Well, I won't say bilaterally symmetrical, but it can be divided in two parts.
And picture number E, too, is kind of strange, because when you really look at it from above, it's just like sitting there all by itself.
Yeah, it's almost like saying, hey, looky here.
Yeah.
Look at this. And once it gets your attention, you know, it just gets to be more and more artificial. And that... the image labeled E, you can also see that that fault line that NASA was talking about when they were trying to explain how this was this formation was created.
Goes right through it.
Yeah, and they're trying to say that the wedge shape and the dome shape were caused by faulting and different faults that lifted up the different areas. But there's nothing like that around it at all. So. It's just,
no, it doesn't.
You know, they really went out of their way to try to give some type of explanation for this image right off the bat. You know, when you're looking at the image, they already have an explanation. They're trying to convince you that this is nothing to see here.
And it's all natural, right?
Yes.
No big deal.
No big deal. Sorry, we have to show you this image.
George, in your opinion, what might it be?
If you relate it to what we're finding on Earth, I mean, all these keyhole formations are built as tombs. Unlike, you know, the pyramids in Egypt, you know, they weren't all built as tombs. This shape is traditionally, in Earth culture, is built as a tomb. You have these, like we were saying earlier, all over the world. There's even a Knights Templar church that was built in Dover, England, that was the template, the footprint of the whole, the ruins of the church was a keyhole formation. So this seems to be a real ancient symbolic architecture that people are using. This is so big on Mars, I don't think it would be built for a single person as a tomb. I'm thinking this is just a huge archaeology. There's probably all kinds of compartments and structures inside this, you know, if we were to go there and start digging.
What if it's an opening to an underground city?
Well, this is big enough to be a city itself.
Yeah.
So yeah, it could be the, you know, the top portions of you know, entering through this area. You know, it's easy to see. It's out in the middle of the plains there, and you know, you land there, and there's probably some types of you know, like you're speculating, there could be some type of entryway into an underground structure.
And the fact, Bill, that it looks so similar to the keyhole tomb in Japan, what does that tell you?
Yes, I mean, it tells you that there's definitely something artificial going on. I'm looking at the mound section, and it looks to me like there is actual alteration. It looks like somebody was trying to design something. I see actually a profile face and a partial face. So I don't know if it's actually if that's intended or if that's just happenstance. But there's a giant gouge on the one side of the mound that definitely looks artificially created.
It is another one of those strange anomalies on a very fascinating planet, isn't it?
Yeah. The other thing we noticed, if we want to move on to the image labeled B,
mm-hmm.
You know, we're talking about what is this made out of? I mean, is this a structure? Is this a tomb? It appears to be made out of, I mean, I'm not a geologist like Bill, but if you look at, if the listeners want to go to the Coast to Coast and look at the images that you put up for us tonight, the one labeled B, we're looking at these indents that are in the structure.
And paint a picture for people who are maybe driving right now, for example.
Right, well, you have this keyhole formation, and at the top you have these little dents as if somebody shot missiles at it or maybe meteors hit it.
Or a shotgun. And it's like a shotgun shot.
It looks like shot, exactly. We discussed that in the paper. It looks like you would have a big ball of aluminum and you would shoot at it. And, you know, when you shoot aluminum, it just makes indents. It doesn't make you don't have that the apron that comes up, like you have a crater when it hits the ground, the soft surface, all the sediment comes
right
up
in ground. Little indentations.
These look like just little dents,
yeah,
which is bizarre, and that's why we noticed those there, and we're trying to figure out what the heck they are.
It's like somebody hit it with a
hint of what this is made out of. It may be some type of metal, like an aluminum.
No, that's an interesting take. I mean, it looks like the end of a ball ping hammer. You know,
yeah, you
bang, bang,
it,
bang.
You know, somebody just dented up, you know, this nice little formation that we made, and guy came around and, you know, banged it up with a hammer.
Well, and the symmetry of it is so fantastically unique and uniform.
Well, yeah, that's what grabs you from the beginning. And, you know, you don't have to be a geologist. You don't have to be an artist. You don't have to be an architect. I mean, it's just looking at this, it screams artificiality.
And I hate to say it, but the structure beneath it in photo B looks like a funny face on Mars, too, doesn't it? The one on the left, the little one?
What are we looking at?
We're looking at picture B.
Okay.
Right underneath the triangle, it looks like another little face. You can see two eyes, a nose, and a mouth.
You're looking at the circular structure?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, well, Bill noticed that there may be some facial features on that circular mound. But, you know, we were like, let's just look at the geometry first. But yeah, there's so much going on in this image. It's amazing.
Is this planet riddled with structures like this all over the place?
Well, if you want to treat the listeners to 10 more structures that are as symmetrical as this, we'd be willing to move on from the paper and talk about some other structures that are on different areas of
the planet
that are just as amazing as this.
I mean, it just it boggles the mind. What else might be out there, George and William?
On Mars?
Yeah.
Well, Bill and I are convinced there are structures everywhere. They're not only in Cydonia. I mean, Cydonia was the area that we all concentrated on early in this research, but we're finding structures like this keyhole formation and other geometric formations that are all over the planet. You know, from Bill and I's earlier research, we concentrated on a lot of the pictographic formations, you know, animals and faces and partial faces and a lot of the artistic formations that we were finding. more of the geoglyphic type of things.
Mm-hmm.
But we even have this whole file of these structures that we're seeing. So it's a whole nother venue for us.
When you both wrote this paper, what was it that they captured you to want to contribute to this?
From my standpoint, I was looking at it for the architectural aspects and the symbolism, you know, because of my art background, obviously. And that's what intrigued me. And I was like, my God, this cannot be something that was just made through nature, through wind erosion.
How about you, Bill?
Yeah, well, it was similar to me. It it was the geometry of it and the diametrically opposed shapes. That I mean, as somebody who studied geomorphology, you know that the erosional patterns of rocks side by side can only vary if the rocks are different are made of different materials. And this structure is the rocks are so huge and so isolated, and their positioning is just so precise. It just screamed artificiality.
Yeah, it really does. Now, tell me more about the Journal of Space Exploration. What is that? Who started that?
The Journal of Space Exploration, I think it was started by a Japanese scientist and a group of researchers that put this journal together.
Okay.
I don't know, 6 years ago or something like that. And it was a journal they actually published real issues that you could hold, but they were bought out by a new corporation that now it's just limited to an online journal. So the journals are published and they're just online. So there's no longer anything, no paper journal being published.
Have you guys done any YouTube work on this?
We haven't, but when Greg first sent this to us back in 2013. And you know, as you can see, Bill and I were very excited about it, and we just couldn't wait to let more people know about it. And we put it up on our Sidonia Institute. We did a little article there, and we put it up on Facebook because Facebook has a big audience for this type
of
stuff.
Oh, they sure do. Yeah.
And within a month or two, there were five or six videos, YouTube videos, up on the Internet using all of our work and not crediting us at all.
A little plagiarism there?
Well, we know that the Internet is the Wild West and, you know, everything goes, but we would think at least they would, you know, source the information where they got it from or give us some type of credit. But we got no credit at all in any of these videos. And they were on the Internet for a long time. There's actually two still up on the Internet, one by the alien hunters and the UFO hunters. And again, they don't credit us with even. They even use my drawings that I've done of the geometrical analysis that we did.
Your actual drawings.
Oh, yeah, my drawings are in there.
Huh.
There are images, everything. Yeah.
Did the check show up?
The the Kufan Japan tomb, the comparisons.
Yeah.
They use it's like everything. It's all ready to go.
Jeez.
And one of these groups actually got written up in the Daily Mail, the newspaper. And
like it was their work.
At all. Yeah.
Jeez, that's amazing.
You know, at least the word's getting out there.
Well, that's the important thing.
It is.
That helps. And what was the impetus for the writing in the journal? What was the spearheading issue that got that in there?
Well, excuse me. We've been working on this for 3 years. You know, science is slow. And, you know, Bill was working at the time, I think, when we started this, and he was going into retirement. And we have Michael Dale, who's a geologist that also works on the papers with us. And he was doing a lot of field work. So it's by the time we all get together and they get their analysis back and you know, their take on what we're looking at, it takes a long time. And so after 3 years, we finally got this published back in September, or accepted with the Journal of Space Exploration. And then I think it was published in November.
Were you coming up with any specific conclusion of what this might have been?
We were just following the data. Bill?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think that, you know, you could really, really say, because it doesn't resemble anything that we use in modern day. We have remnants from the past that are, we know that some of them are tombs. So there is really no, well, this is what it is. It's just that this is something that shouldn't be there.
If you were to fill it up with water, it would look like you have a little lake on the top and then you've got this huge aqueduct on the bottom. Could that be something that it might have been used for?
You mean like this was had water surrounding it?
Inside of it.
Oh, well, I don't know.
Like a storage tank of some sort.
Oh, like this is a big storage tank
yeah.
out in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
The little villagers that were there.
Exactly.
Who knows? You know, George, the only way we're going to know, we need to go there. And nobody seems to be interested in actually setting foot on Mars.
No, not yet, at least. Maybe by 2020 we'll start looking at these.
The public getting exposed to something like this and, you know, some of the other formations that we've been finding, you know, maybe the interest will push NASA to, you know, make some big commitments.
George, would you say categorically that there are some structures on Mars that you would say are definitely, and we'll say man, for lack of what these beings might have been, that they're man-made? Yeah.
I'd say there's dozens, not just one.
And they're not accidental, are they?
It's, you know, if you find one, you could probably explain it away, that you're finding a fluke. But, you know, we have files and files full of these things. I mean, we try to get them put out publicly, try to get them published in journals, you know, to go the high road, try to go the scientific way, and, you know, get these out there. And it's just, you know, it's going to be difficult for Bill and I to choose what's going to be the next paper, because we have so many that we could work on.
It's exciting, though, isn't it?
It is. But it seems like nobody's paying attention.
Well, you keep just smacking away at it, and we'll do our part on our end.
George Norrie's paying attention.
You got that right. We're going to keep you two for phone calls when we come back. Lots of folks interested in not only this structure, but just what is going on planet Mars. And then we'll get your take on space exploration in general. Our guest, George Haas, William Saunders, their website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It's called the Cydonia Institute. com, and I invite you to go to their website. Look at their works, by the way. Fascinating research. And you got to have that. You got to have all kinds of that. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with your phone calls next hour.